You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Market Musings Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome onto the Market Musings Podcast, where today we'll be talking to Henrik Zeeberg, who's been on the podcast a few times before. Henrik is, of course, the macroeconomist, founder of the Zeeberg Report and head of macro at Swiss Block. And we're also joined by Darren Hazelwood. Again, Darren Hazelwood, a familiar face on the podcast and on Stopbox, of course, the CEO of Panther Metals with gold and graphite, nickel and copper projects in Canada. Darren is very much in tune with the markets and, of course, likes a good discussion on all factors driving the economy. So thank you all very much for joining us. Henrik, first of all, how are you? How are things generally?
I'm very good, thank you. I think, everything we see in the market is developing like what I've been expecting. So that is awesome. So things are good here.
It's always good, isn't it? It's always good. And Darren, how are things with you?
Yeah, no, they're good. Thanks, Mark. We're seeing the markets move a touch more within the sector. I think sentiment's returning, so it's always a very positive sign.
Yeah, well, of course, when you talk about sentiment returning, I presume that is in the mining, which we do want to talk about in this podcast. And you do see it. I mean, you know, you've got gold all-time highs and holding 24.25 today. Copper, of course, doing the same thing. Uranium. We see things like BHP making bids for Anglo American. You know, it actually does feel like stuff might be going, but the juniors are still quite down, aren't they? But companies are managing to raise some capital. And we see a lot of buoyancy, let's say, in the main indices, the S&P 500, for example, the NASDAQ, all making all-time highs. So I wonder if we can first perhaps talk generally about the economy and these things with Henrik. And just, you know, remind us, Henrik, of your theory. You've got this theory of a blow-off top. You know, you say an almighty crash, but not yet, not yet. That's what you always say on your Twitter there and what you say to your subscribers on the Zeeberg Report. So just introduce us, I think, to the theory that you're working with and where you perhaps think we are in terms of a timescale.
Sure. So the basis of all of the work that I do is a deep understanding of the business cycles. And there are many ways that people look at business cycles. I have my way and developed a model which never has produced a false signal when it comes to recession. So whenever it says there's recession is coming, it's not a timing indicator, so it doesn't come the next day or the next week or the next quarter, but it always comes eventually. And with that and with a lot of other things that I look at, well, there's no doubt that a recession is coming. But it was also clear in 2022 when everybody was calling for the crash in the market that this was not the time. The model that I'm working with, that we use, simply just showed that the economy was not in a stage where we were about to see a recession unfold. So at that point, I was very, very bullish, and I'm still very bullish, because what it also shows is that when you get into the final phase of the business cycle, into the phase where the Fed is, you know, first pulsing and then they start to cut, well, that is when you should start to become scared. And based on the Elliott Wave model that we work with, also we could predict the S&P. And I went back in October 22. I said, well, we're going to reach 6,100, and we're on the S&P, and we're getting there. Still some way to go, and that's why I'm saying not yet. We're not there yet. But when we get there, there's no doubt in my mind that we're going to see one of the worst recessions we have seen since, and I want to say since 1929, because the bubble is simply so big this time around that when this one goes, it's going to be really bad.
Okay, well, there's a few things there. So you're targeting you're still expecting 6,100. That's your sort of target on the S&P. So yeah, a fair way to go. That would be all complete human history ever, all time highs, kind of unfathomable at the moment, I would say. And then the big crash, which of course won't be pleasant. But you talked about the business cycle. So what is the business cycle? How are you tracking this?
So the business cycle is defined by the leading, coincident, and lagging indicators of the economy. So you have indicators of the economy. These are indicators that are delivered by the conference board. So if you look at those and you treat them in the way, or you analyze them in the way that I do, it becomes very clear that you have cycles where the leading indicators actually leads the coincident, and the lagging. That means that you have you actually have an idea, or you know where the economy is going. And if, as I said, if you go 70 years back in terms of time and you look at the leading indicators, then when they have shown a recession signal, they have always been right. This model has always been right. And what we're seeing now is that slow deterioration of the real economy. So the leading indicators are more in the financial sector. That's like the market yield, the yield spread and others. There are many others. And when you see that deterioration, and especially like what we have seen this time around, where we are like 23 months worth of declines in the leading indicators, that tells us that something big is coming. This is at the size of what we have before the financial crisis, only this time the bubble is bigger. So the leading indicators are telling us that. Now we are expecting and waiting for that deterioration in the coincident indicators, meaning the labor market, which we are slowly seeing. And we have already seen that in the housing market, which now has bounced a bit. But I say still that we're going to see a lot of a decline in that as well. So the recession is coming. And I can just say that every day I see more and more proof of it. The consumer is struggling. Interest payments are up like nothing we have seen in 70 years in terms of the spike we saw in interest payments. And that is what kills the business cycle. Credit card delinquencies are starting to become, as severe as they were before the financial crisis, and so on and so on. So all the indicators are there. It's just about looking.
And I wonder if we can talk about some of those indicators. I mean, you just mentioned there about the consumers struggling, and I live in the Netherlands. Darren's in the UK. You're obviously in Denmark. I would say in the UK, I still have friends over there, that people are finding the cost of living tricky, and getting housing is not the easiest thing. Here, I see the opposite. I see housing, people still overbidding for houses. I see houses extremely expensive. I go around on a Friday, Saturday evening, I see the bars are full, the restaurants are full. I see people who are not rolling in cash. Talk to my friends, they're not rolling in cash, but they're not struggling. I don't know. What do you think, Darren? What do you see in the UK on that front?
Yeah, but I think there's been a general erosion of personal wealth over the last 40, 50 years. But it does feel like it's. I think it has to peak around now to encourage people to continue working in reality. But I think we're probably seeing a sea change across the globally. Clearly the debt situation is now really impinging. But I don't necessarily see the only way out of the debt situation from my view is to inflate the economies out of it. So we've had to take a certain level of pain. Well, certainly in the UK it feels like we're getting towards the bottom of that. And income and expenditure is starting to level out, and things like inflation in the supermarkets has definitely eased. And you just start to sense with people you're talking to that they've paid the bills and they're no longer having to borrow to keep that up. So yeah, it's an interesting moment, I think you'll find.
Okay, so you're just kind of feeling that the UK people are starting to feel a bit better, maybe. And I did see the headline this morning that food inflation had sort of stabilized out there. I mean, in Denmark, Henrik, what are you seeing there?
Well, but honestly, I what I see here is probably not the right picture. Again, also because we like individuals, we like to point to our next door neighbor and say, oh, he's doing fine or he's not doing fine. But honestly, I don't think that's the way we should look at this. This is about the big data. This is about macro. The people that I live next to, they don't have problems paying their bills, and whether milk costs a little extra is not a big issue for them. But if you look at it in terms of the big picture, and you look at 70% of the U.S. economy is the consumer, and you look at the as I said the credit card delinquencies now, the credit card balances, well, how they have been moving up, and also if you look at the median household income spent on annual mortgage payments, that is now like in their around 35% of the the household income, where it normally is around 25%, and that is for the normal consumer in the U.S. big problem. So it may seem that maybe that my next door neighbor is okay, but this is not the point. The point is what's happening globally here, and globally it is the economy, it's the consumer, and they are struggling. And there's no doubt about it. The payments, everywhere we check now, the credit card delinquencies and so on are simply just showing us we have exactly the same kind of setup for a replay of the of 2007 to 2009 at this moment. And the housing market has also declined first. Yes, we've seen a bounce, but it's we're nowhere out of the we do not have a soft landing. A soft landing will require that the consumer as well. So I think it's much, much worse than anybody maybe or a lot of people actually realize at this point.
Okay. And go on, Darren, where are you going?
Yeah, no, I was just going to ask, Emery, do you think the quality of the data that we're receiving from governments globally is of the same ilk it was 20 years ago?
That I don't have any answer to. I obviously there can be many reasons for why they change the data and so on. But again, as I said, if you look at the the yield inversion, we have an inverted yield right now, and we have had that for the second year now. But we are in the second year of that. So why is it that we every time we have an inverted yield inversion, we see we have a recession? But this time we're gonna get we're not gonna see a recession. So I just say that. We have all the indicators there, and we try to say, oh, yeah, we don't really like that conclusion because it doesn't feel good. It's not a nice conclusion. It makes, a lot of people hurt. I don't want that, but I just point to that, and I cannot see how we'll get out of this situation without seeing a recession.
Okay. And some of these indicators will be, you say, the yield inversion. And what else are you looking at then? The consumer sentiment, you say credit card debt, personal debt, those kind of things. What are the big things that you're looking at that ring the alarm bells?
There are, so these are some of the bigger ones, yeah, obviously. So again, I'm looking at it from the leading indicators, which are the ones that I mentioned. Also, if you look at housing permits, that's another thing. So when housing permits starts to move down, that's also a problem. That's because people do not want to, borrow money and start to building a house. You also see that they are down. And when you look in the models that I use, you have crossed the line of where this is going to develop into something negative. So there are many. It's not just one, two, or three. And it's not the charts alone. It's really the real economy that is now deteriorating. And it's doing that slowly. So Titanic has hit the iceberg. And now we are still playing, the music is still playing, but the ship is sinking.
Okay, but why would that mean that we have this blow off top then first? And of course, indices are all time highs. You still think the liquidity, the madness will continue until the Titanic actually does sink?
Yeah, because that's what we normally see. So what we see is that when we have, actually, if you look at it, You can simply see how the deterioration of the economy begins into the financial crisis also, and how that when the interest payments start to move up, the consumer stops spending, or not stop, but they reduce their spending because they simply can't afford it. And then you'll see slowly that the unemployment rate starts to move up slowly, very slowly, crosses a few levels, and then you'll see that the market tops out. And it does that also because the last infusion of liquidity comes through the first of all, the Dixie soap normally takes a tumble right into it, but also because the Fed starts to say, well, now we pause and now we will need to see more data to see if we need to cut rates and so on. And you will also see other countries start to try to fight off recession. And we have to remember things are not just about the US. There are also central banks of China and the ECB and other places where, things are not necessarily as good. So you will have liquidity. And if you look at the global M2, actually, which is a good proxy for liquidity in the world, you will actually see that that has been moving up over the last couple of months. So for as long as, again, it's actually a nice metaphor for it. It's the Titanic. We hit the iceberg. That is what the leading indicators, all these indicators tells us. And now the music is playing. People are still saying, yeah, why don't we get another, you know, drink? Because obviously nothing is wrong. I say that we are ending up in the water.
Okay. M2, you mentioned that's money flows, that's isn't it?
That's a money base. That's M2 is the money base that you look at. So, yeah.
It's liquidity in the global economy. It's interesting because one of the leading indicators of a healthy economy, or one of the best indicators globally, has always been freight rates, and particularly container rates. And I've noted that those rates in the last... And it's also a leading indicator for inflation coming back in, I hasten to add. But freight rates have gone from sort of from China around $2,200 to over $5,000 in the last 2 or 3 months into the UK. And I'm aware of people that are bringing in goods from China as quick as they can. And they're trying to get them into storage because of how quickly this is shifting. And that's normally a really positive indicator for the global economy, and it's often one of the first indicators. And with governments now discussing the potential for interest rates being cut, especially in the UK, we've seen what the Fed have said, and they're more of a level playing field, I think, with that. Is there a chance that we could have seen the top in interest rates and that we could be heading for a soft landing?
So absolutely, I think we have seen the top in interest rates, and they are going to plummet. But that's the problem. I mean, the problem is actually that when they start to plummet, it's really because the demand of money is going to go down as fast as it is, and you only see that because the demand of, you know, all the things that you have in the economy is moving down. So that is the problem. If you look at the 2-year yield, and you'll see that normally starts to plummet 4, 5, 6 months before you see the recession sets in. And I think we had the top in October of 23. Now we have seen a bounce in that. And I think the bounce that you talk about in the container rates is actually that as well. And we also saw in the housing market, which now have people confused and saying, oh, but now things are fine again. And that's where we will see, you know, whether I will be right or whether, you know, a lot of other people will be right. I'm just saying, I think we are going to end up in the water because of all the things that I see, and I see how we can have a soft landing when the economy. Actually, I don't understand the notion of soft landing, because soft landing would mean that the consumer is well. The economy needs to be well. That means that the consumer, which is 70% of the economy, needs to be well. And if they are spending their money on interest payments, which is they are right now because the interest rates are so high, then we don't have a soft landing. That simply does not. I cannot see how that can align. So I don't see the soft landing anywhere.
Well, what do you think around the discussions over the last couple of months of the Americans potentially seeing inflation creeping back in that would result in them actually going the other way and possibly having to put up interest rates again? What would be the logic behind that?
I can't see the logic of that. I think that's pure speculation, and it's the difference between direction and bounce. The direction in interest rates now and the economy is down because of what we see with the consumer. The consumer is the economy. And if you look at everything, as I said, in terms of that, you'll see that numbers are not great. And that means that slowly we're going to see the interest rate. The interest rates are actually part of the lagging indicators. The leading indicators are the one that tells us, okay, now we hit it. That's what, you know, destroys the boat. Then the coincident indicators is the labor market and the likes, which is what we see on a daily basis. And then you have the lagging indicators. Rates are part of the lagging indicators because they actually, you know, they follow after the labor market starts to decline. So people that are, you know, looking at the rates and saying, okay, this is the direction the economy is going, you're actually looking out the back of the car while driving and, you know, forwards. So we can use that they will come down strongly. And you can see that also into any recession, you'll see that they move up the first you have, you know, all the quicker moving things, and then you'll see the rates are coming up lastly. And that's also what we've seen this time around. And also when you turn and you start to see the decline, you see it in the housing market first, you see it in the labor market, and then it comes to the rates later on. So hence, the rates, we cannot really adjust the economy by. We can look at them and say, we can actually say, well, they very much are likely to go in that direction because that's the leading and the coincident indicators are telling us that.
What about, because in 2008, the globe was rescued effectively by governments taking on debt, moving debt from private to public, and it kept the M2 flow going only just, I think, by the skin of its teeth. Now, as you've alluded to, the level of debt on a global scale is unprecedented now. Historically, to pull us out of recession, governments have invested in infrastructure, etc. But at these level of debt that the governments would be holding, where are they going to find that capital from? How would you turn that ship? Or how would you refloat the Titanic, I guess, would be the question amongst us. Because we're in unique global times. The American budget is completely blown out of the water. Mark touched on gold. I think the Chinese have played an absolutely stunning hand over the last 20 years in terms of transfer of physical gold from the West to the East. And every time the gold goes up by a dollar, all it does is strengthen the East against the West because of the value of it. And do you see a scenario where the West can drag itself out?
But it's like asking, you know, somebody on the Titanic actually after having hit the iceberg, what will you do actually to make sure it doesn't sink? And there's not too much to do at this point, honestly. I mean, the damage has been done. And now we need to go for the lifeboats. And the ones that are actually knowing where to go first and in which lifeboat and also how to do it will be the ones that actually, you know, comes out of this the best. Unfortunately, I see there will be a lot of casualties in this also this time around. And how to pull yourself out of something where we already seeing the economy and the consumer, you know, struggling as they do at this point here. I can't see that. The soft landing that, okay, there must be something we can do. I think that is a bit of a... I don't want to call it naive, but maybe yet it is that you know, really it's such so much bigger than you know, just, you know, what we can do. We can just, you know, start pushing money in. Well, there are two ways you can do that. You can either do monetary stimulus or you can do fiscal stimulus. And if you do either of those right now, if you do fiscal, they are so afraid of doing any of that right now. You can see they don't even want to let the rates come down. How they can do that? Well, they can try to see if they can stimulate the demand by doing monetary stimulus again. But the risk is that when people have experienced inflation as they've done, and they have experienced high rates, well, giving them more money in the hand will not make the consumer spend more. That probably will make them save more because they know that we got hurt by inflation and we got hurt by the rates. And this will be the big problem this time around. There's no free lunch. So I think the last time, when in 2008, there was an option for the free lunch, which is, you know, the magic of printing money. The magic of printing money. Print the money and people feel more wealthy. And then, you know, and then they've tried to do it over and over. But the return on that will come down. And I think actually it will come to haunt us. We saw this time around, we actually already saw that we were on the verge of igniting stagflation. We didn't see unemployment come up because they were, let's say, lucky, or the business cycle wasn't. I would say business cycle wasn't there, but the problem was that the inflation spiked. And if they do this one more time, and people are not starting to spend that money, we have to remember the liquidatists, as I call them now, the ones that believe that you can just infuse money and a monetary stimulus will need to understand that in order for that to become real economy, you need the consumers to start spending that money. If they save it, it just sits there. And then you have the risk of that actually becoming inflation because it'll start chasing commodities and the like. So I can see gold also at some point, silver and something like that, you know, all these precious metals and also commodities in across the board will go up tremendously, but it will not be in the first phase of this. In the first phase, I think it'll be quite different.
But is the consumer resilient enough to handle potentially what's ahead? Since 1929, we've seen a dramatic change in society. And even the society, even my parents' generation, they had parents that have experienced that. They've lived in households where the income levels were subsistence rather than any treats. And so they're used to that, and that's what. And now my generation has had an easier run of it in comparison. So we've become less resilient. But now the next generation after that, it seems, are even less resilient. And could that then lead to wider social and economic issues?
Yeah, but I think again, I don't want to sound too gloomy or doomy. I mean, it's when we look at this, I mean, if I'm right in my thesis here, then we're going to get a deflationary bust first. The Fed will get I'll get back to your question. The Fed will get all in and say, okay, when they finally stare deflation or recession in the eyes, they will actually get back in and say, okay, we'll stimulate something. And what they probably will see this time around, at least that's what my analysis point to, is that you will not see the consumer starting to spend. And if they don't, if it takes longer, then you will not see that the labor market starts to improve. And that is what you really need for the economy to get going again. So if the consumers do not start to spend, or they don't take that extra loan to buy something new, then you will not see the spending come back up. And that is the problem that I think we're going to face this time around. So if we're going to see that, and we could actually potentially then see a stagflation unfold for the reasons I just pointed out, because if people are then sitting on their money or maybe start speculating them or putting them in, where would you go as an investor then? If you can see that the businesses are not thriving, and so you'll not invest your money in stocks, and you don't want to invest them in bonds because the interest rate is going up because of inflation. Where you're going to go with it. So I think you can have a speculative situation there, or a commodity boom, I would call it, which can be a problem. If I'm right on that thesis, but that part of it, deflation first and then a potential stagflation later, then the stagflationary part will be very, will be bad news for a lot of consumers. And people could see their, life savings go away also, while they see that they lose their job and also see that the price of groceries goes up. I mean, I hope I'm not right on that part, but I could be right.
Okay. Well, it does sound like it does sound a bit doom and gloomy. I mean,
It does.
It does, doesn't it? But I mean, we're not there yet. And then you talked about going for the lifeboat. So we're here to talk about how to take advantage of different situations and mitigate damage, but also try and benefit from it. So I mean, timing is everything in this, isn't it? I mean, but it's extremely difficult to get it right. But what are your thoughts on timing? The blow off top, when do you expect to see the almighty pump, pump, pump to that 6,100 in the S&P, if that's what we're kind of benchmarking against?
So the way I do that is that I look at the when I think the recession is going to set in. And if you look at various indicators for that, for instance, if you look at the market yield inversion, the spike of that, to the downside, so the maximum inverted was, normally you will see between 12 to 15 months from the spike of that to when the recession starts. And that spike down was in June of last year. That means that 12 to 15 months from that time on would mean into Q3 or Q4 of this year. I think it's going to be Q4 for various reasons, also because I don't think the labor market has deteriorated quite enough yet. I don't think we'll get into 25. Could I see it going to 25? Yes, but I think it'll be Q4 of this year that the recession sets off, and that means that the market, also with various trend lines and things that I do in terms of technical analysis, seems like we could see the blow off top developing into August or September.
Do you think that the global elections that are sweeping the world this summer autumn could see incumbent governments doing everything they can to kick that can down the road into 2025. It's just the nature of politicians that once their job's under threat, they will do anything and everything to get that extra vote. And could you see them just injecting whatever they have to do, regardless of the medium to long-term consequences, to just give everybody a little bit more of that feel-good factor to then kick it into 2025. And it's something, obviously, the Chinese haven't had to ever do and why they're probably steaming ahead on so many fronts, because they haven't had to sit through that sort of 4 to 5 year cycle that in the West is frankly, I think, crippling us. But that's a separate discussion. Do you think that could have an impact here?
No, but honestly, if you ask any politicians today, they'll say that everything is great. So right now, I mean, you're here now, right now, and you know we'll have June soon, and everybody's saying, oh, it's great, and we have the election in November in the U.S. at least, and you know elsewhere in the world, like you know various dates. But everybody thinks things are great, and even if you look back in the financial crisis, you had Bernanke actually in 2008 coming out and say in February saying, oh. We were close, but we actually managed to staff it off, the recession. So they don't really know it. It's not like they sit and they have better, you know, I'm sometimes surprised to see that, you know, how poorly they actually understand the economy. Sorry, but I mean that. So I don't think they know it. So this about having, you know, an almighty government that understands exactly what's going to come here, I think they will just, you know, they will focus on trying to get reelected and of course do everything what is taken. But we are talking about the hole in the Titanic here, and this is something much, much bigger, which potentially down the road will require a monetary reset of some sort. So I don't think that is what we're going to see. I think we're going to see the normal cycle. We are, you know, running right over the cliff, and everybody will be saying until the moment where it becomes very obvious to everybody that something is wrong, that, you know, things are fine, just like what we saw with the Lehman Brothers. I mean, things were obviously not fine many, many months before that. And the recession started in December of 2007. So people did not see, they don't see it. And that's what I fear we do this time as well.
Do you not think the Fed see it then? Do you genuinely think they don't see it? Because my impression is that this market is managed, you know, in various ways. You know, Yellen seems to crop up just the right time when the S&P dips. Yellen is concerned is the sort of the joke. And then I think it's a complete joke that once a month, or I can't remember, once every 6 weeks when they have the FOMC, you know, and like everybody sits around their computers as one man manipulates the market.
I think it's crazy. I don't know if it's best better whether they are lying or whether they don't know it. That's the two, you know, either when they tell us we don't see a recession, they either lie or they actually don't know it. And I don't know which one I prefer of that. Probably I would prefer that they are lying, because then I would think that there is a grown up or an adult in the room that will take care of us. But honestly, I don't think that they do. And they always think of the best possible outcome and say, yeah, but we hope that this will happen. So I don't know if they can see it.
I think it's no clear one that the Bank of England – sorry, Mark. I think it's clear now the Bank of England and the Fed are political animals as opposed to their proposed independence. I don't buy that in the slightest, if anybody does. Yeah, they're either naive or insane, possibly a bit of both. But yeah, I agree.
I mean, I don't think we'll have a. So your timeline is sort of Q4 would be more where I'll be looking if we're thinking of this, or into Q5, 2025, just because I don't think the Yanks are going to let it happen before the election. They're certainly not the Democrat side. I just can't see them let that disaster unfold. Maybe it's out of their control. But I think they'll do everything they can. You know, the US is not going to go down without a fight. And that sort of brings me on to thinking, you know, what does happen? You know, do you think we see a fundamental power shift? You know, Darren was talking about the Chinese, of course, buying up gold fundamentally. We see that the talk about the BRICS currency, you know, and that kind of East-West fight, if you like. Do you see a power shift? Do you see a monetary reset? You know, capitulation and everything's horrible, and then the United States rebases against gold or something. What do you see as sort of the way out of this for the governments, you know, in globally?
So I think, you know, when it comes to the first part, again, it depends on the type of crisis. There are different types of crisis. And I would say that last time in 2008, it was a deflationary crisis. You can pump money into that, and then you can have the kind of outcome that we have had now for 16 years. If you look at what I'm suggesting here, that actually now we get into the end of what is possible with monetary easing, then the first part of the crisis, well, they are going to try to pump, you know, some, you know, air into the economy again, pump money into the economy again. And I think that is going to fail. So that kind of, you know, that part of it will be much, much more severe. So when they find out all of a sudden that we try to stimulate the economy, but the money is actually sitting still or is starting to circulate into commodities, which you could see, you know, for speculation, investors trying to say, okay, where can we find yield? And then you get this self-going propelled, you know, inflationary spiral in the commodities and in gold and silver. Well, that's a problem, because if you infuse more money into that system, then you'll get more inflation and you don't necessarily get any, you know, labor market effects. So what do you do? And that is the that is really the problem of stagflation. Those needs to be, they will take time. They take time to unfold. There's not much you can do. The only thing you can try to do is that you try to create some trust in the monetary system again, which is, it is basically, you know, distrust in that. And if you do that, obviously a monetary reset at some point can be a solution, but that's a bigger thing. And I think that could be coming. I think like what we saw after the Second World War with Bretton Woods, you would actually see that they need to say, well, okay, we have this huge pile of debt, and we know that that was the old money kind of thing. Now we'll introduce the new world kind of money. And I think there can be a crypto element to that, where the you know, the Fed and the ECBs, and they're already working on that, would try to go in and say, okay, we'll have some transparency in that. Do I think in that process that you will see the BRICS trying to come in and trying to take over this, the domination of the world, because whoever you know has the reserve currency would you know rule the world? Well, yes, they would try, but I don't see that they will have a strength to it. And obviously they will not be able to agree enough to it. So they will try, and they will try to do it through a commodity play, which will probably also be the right way to play it, if I had to play it as well, in a game of chess. But I simply don't see that they will be strong enough. And so I see, yes, a monetary reset will potentially become the solution down the road, where the debt and the will be restructured and forgiven and defaulted on and so on. And then we're going to see, as we talked about before the show here started, that we're going to see the Kondratiev spring, where we kind of, you know, reshuffle things and we start out new, all new and fresh. And I think in that world, we would potentially see that there is some kind of anger to the monetary policies, because the problems we have at hand at these days is because of the, crazy monetary situation or monetary stimulus that we have been sending out over the last 16 years. Modern monetary theory, which apparently require, you know, is enough to get you a Nobel Prize for. So I think this is something that will come to haunt us, and the real, you know, cleaning up that mess will require a monetary reset of some yeah. sort, with okay. gold at the center, with some crypto element. I'm not clever enough to really, you know, to come up with that solution.
In that scenario, the only way for the globe, and I don't think it's the globe anymore as well, by the way, personally, I think we've seen a distinct east-west split, and I think that chasm is just going to get wider and wider now. I don't see that coming back. Certainly my dealings in North America and talking to diplomatic corps, etc. I think it's clear that there is a defined split. I think everybody's aware of that, but that's just going to get bigger. But I think in the West, you are 100% going to have to see an asset-backed currency come back in. What assets are you personally? Will they go just back to gold? I think egos will probably stop them from doing just gold. I think you might find that they'll become a basket of currencies. One of the reasons is, to be honest with you, as I alluded to earlier, the amount of gold that shifted east, that must have the Fed shifting uncomfortably in their chair, because they've just got too much gold. but it definitely will revert to an asset back, certainly in the short term, because otherwise, because people won't have confidence unless there is some asset backed gold, asset backed currency. The move away in 71 was basically the foundation for where we find ourselves today. And it's blatantly, obviously, been proved it doesn't work, because it's just too easy for people to get in that printing press and issue currency at will. So no, it will certainly will be an interesting process that we go through. And you know, nobody wants to really live in interesting times. I agree.
Well, yeah. So I do want to finish off by talking about commodities. And you know, because I know Henrik, one of your thesis is after the blow off top, there'll be the almighty opportunity, you know, once in a generation, once in a lifetime opportunity in the miners and in the commodities. But what's driving the price of gold at the minute, for example? I mean, you can kind of understand what might be driving copper. We talk about the green economy, the shift, and we've seen government policy, governments investing in projects. You know, you can see how that's perhaps been driven. Also uranium as well. You know, there are kind of demands for that. But they're all commodities and they're all doing well. But gold in particular, which is the inflation proof commodity, isn't it? The one that people go to in times of fear. What's driving the price of gold now, do you think? Do you think this is a leading indicator as well of troubled times?
Well, I think it's a leading indicator of people trying to guess where to hide out or where to go to if they are a little worried about the situation. Because I think if you look at gold, I actually think that's the outlier when you look at the rest of the precious metals. If you look at platinum, if you look at palladium, if you look at silver, they're nowhere near the all-time highs. And the same goes for the miners and everything else. So I think gold has become kind of, you know, its own meme. It's become something that is, you know, it's a bubble kind of thing in the kind of world really? We live in, as I see it right now. No, but, you know, I am very, very bullish gold, just not yet. Because I don't think gold will be good at gold, silver, and anything, you know, precious metals. Will be good to hold in a world where you know liquidity will become the shortage in a liquidity crisis and a banking crisis. So you will see gold. The reason why you need to hold gold is because gold will always supply you liquidity if liquidity is needed. That's why you need liquidity. That's why you know you need to hold gold in a crisis because then you have liquidity. You can always sell gold. But the problem is the way that gold actually you know behaves then is being sold off is actually that the price is declining. So if you see into deflationary parts of crisis, you know, see into 2008, in March to September of 2008, you actually saw gold declining by 34%. And if you saw from March of 2008 until October of 2008, also for silver crashed by 60%. So would I be holding gold into that scenario that I'm predicting that it's going to be the first phase of this? No, I will not. Did I predict that it will go to 2300, 2400 that it's in now? No, I did not. But that's where. But you, if you look at the silver and palladium and platinum, and the miners also, they all say, "Hey, gold, you are off to something here, which is not off to a false start." Let's say. So I think we're going to see gold coming down. I maintain that view. I cannot see how you can go into a deflationary crisis where you have the largest bubble ever seen. You were talking about also the market cap to GDP before the show. I mean, everybody could see that we had a IT bubble in 2000. Everybody, and then everybody could see also we have a real estate bubble. But right now, the market cap to GDP is like double what we had into the real estate bubble that everybody could see, and nobody can see we have a bubble now. And when bubble deflates, you have deflation. Values comes out, and that creates a liquidity crunch, a liquidity crisis. And I will not be holding precious metal into a liquidity crisis. But did I see 2400? No, I did not.
Okay. Yeah, that 100, that market cap, that's the market cap of the US indices, the NASDAQ, the S&P, 188% of GDP. Yeah, so that's where that is, which is it's never been that high before. So you would say dumb money is going to gold then, not smart right now.
That was your words. I'm just saying into a liquidity crisis, I would not be holding gold. I mean, why would you hold something that again, when you have something also that is yielding something, you have TLTs, you got bonds that will, you know, be worth a lot more and will come up because the interest rate will come down. So why hold something that is yielding zero? I just don't see it, which historically also has been declining when you had a deflationary crash.
However, is this a unique set of circumstances where you actually could be in a scenario where you can't trust government bonds? So you're only, you can't trust government bonds, you can't trust anything, property, and you end up actually only having one place to turn to, which would be precious metals. You can't trust the banking system because the bubble is that big.
Yeah, but I just don't. I mean, again, we have to think about the phases of it. So I think there will be different phases to it. And again, I want to say there is. That's why I'm saying into the. You know, it's just. It's not just going to be one crisis as I see. It's going to be a crisis, a bounce at a crisis. And if you look into the first part of that crisis, that will simply be equities, crypto starting to be sold off. You know, on, you know, across the board and very violently. So when you reach the levels that I think we're going to see, that will be, you know, huge sell-off. And then at that point, you know, that will be where there will be banks around the world that are starting to suffer. Remember, the banks are only as strong as their consumer, as their, you know, the customers are. And if their customers right now are struggling because, you know, and to make payments and all that, well, we'll start to see some trickle-down effects of that. That will cross, and especially also, as we saw back in 2008, when things are starting to, you know, when the water goes out, we don't know who is bathing naked, right? And that's what we're going to see this time around again. Liquidity into that pot. And but yes, when you then get to the second phase of that, because when the Fed comes in, I think, you know, they're going to offset a stagflationary phase. And there I agree with you. Absolutely. I will be holding that. I want to, you know, ride that major bubble in gold and silver and gold miners. My models just point to that gold miners, Barrick, and some of the large ones, they have rather a large decline still ahead of them before we get to that level that I'm expecting, and we'll be buying them at that point.
Okay. So that would come in shortly after the crisis, effectively, after you've hit the blow-off top, end of Q4, as you're sort of alluding to. What's your sort of timeline to see the opportunity in the miners?
This is very difficult to say, but I think there is a good moment in, let's say, The Big Short, actually, where they say that now the Bernanke? No, it was Paulson who was at the Senate or something like that, right? And I think that the moment when you see something bigger, something, you know, a package, when we start to act, and there is a we need to solve this problem. I mean, obviously, everybody here needs first to, you know, come along with me on the journey saying we're going to get a bust of a big deflation bubble, and first of all, right? But if you see that and you're starting to get those trickle-on effects from that on the banking sector as well, well, at the moment when they get into that, when you have that kind of moment from The Big Short, you can actually say that is probably the moment when you can start to say it could be interesting, because obviously they will try to inflate the system again. They will. That's what they have. Mm. They have the printing press. They will do that. The thing is, what is it that they're going to offset at that point when they do it? Will they really be able to turn it into real economy again? Or will we going to see something different? Either way, last time when they did that, when we saw QE coming out in October of 2008, we saw gold and silver, you know, just soaring. And that's the moment I'll be waiting for.
Right. Okay. Good. So in terms of the lifeboats then, or what perhaps people should do. I know, of course, you can follow you on Twitter, and of course you've got the Zeeberg report as well. I know you do your live show and you talk through the various elements that are driving this, and you know, you will let people know you know, when it's the right time to do things. But what is the sort of plan of action from Henrik Zeeberg at the moment? Would it be to sort of play the markets, play the futures markets, you know, buy into the S&P 500, play the kind of blow off top, and then get the heck out and wait for the opportunity? What's your play?
So I'm long risk here. You know, I have bonds also as
long
well.
Risk.
I have some defensive, but long risk, absolutely, by the vast majority of it. And also, you know, very risky assets, I would say, also with crypto and miners and things that, and, you know, even assets that I believe will not have a lot of value if we get into the bus, that I believe. So, but I think it'll be fantastic right now here. So that's what I see now. Obviously, I think I know what I'm looking for and what I'll be aiming at. So this is not a game or play for everybody, but that's what I'm at now. Coming into the
long
crisis,
risk, into the, to Q, yeah, long it's a long risk, risk into absolutely. Q3, Q4.
Q3, probably, yeah.
Also, so fairly soon then you would look to be reallocating.
Again, the levels will be telling more. That people are always saying me, when is it? But I'm, oh, and then I say, I give them a kind of indication. I'll say, but I've said since October 22, I said 6,100. And that is what, you know, and that is what I've been waiting for. Taking longer than I expected, yes, and I'll still be waiting for that. If it takes until Q4, then I'll take that as well. I think what is important for me is to, and for investors, I think, is to be on the right side of the market, which means that being long risk for as long as it takes. I've been long risk since October 22, and now I'll still be long risk into what I think will be the top. So, yeah, but if you ask for a timeline, Q3, August, September could be the top, and then I will be looking into bonds, and I'll be looking into cash, and being also long the dollar versus other currencies around the world.
Okay, excellent, Darren. Any final thoughts from you? I mean, of course, your company is into mining, so you want the high gold price, really. You want the buoyancy in the markets, but do you think we're going to come into a bit of a crisis, quite a big one, according to Henrik?
Yeah, well, I don't disagree with Henrik's analysis of everything. I do think that this is a totally unique time in global economics, and history is the best pointer to future events, as I say. However, what we've seen. So much debt we've seen. We've never had such a strong economy to the east that is gradually easing away from its reliance on the west with the BRICS, etc. It's probably way too early in that cycle for it to be able to carry itself through any major downturn. But in the commodity space, that then adds in a different element that we certainly, you know, we wouldn't have time to discuss on here, but the availability of commodities and the Chinese influence in Africa, and something that's never ever touched on, the Russian influence in Africa as well. The BRICS globally have got a big footprint on a lot of commodities that the West needs and the West doesn't have. So I can maybe see, I personally, how this plays out, I don't know, but I can see a split, east-west split, and then that could shore up the commodity prices that we're seeing in the West and obviously in the East as well, but maybe at different ways. Other than that, I am quite bullish. I'm very bullish commodities, and that's just not looking through rose-tinted glasses. We've all seen the predictions. We're going to go into shortages in commodities almost across the board. I understand the deep recession will have implications on industrial commodities, but then even with a deep recession, the actual availability of those commodities is shrinking daily anyways. So that's going to help shore up that price during anything that does turn south. So, no, interesting times. And maybe a bit more bullish on the wider commodity basket than Henrik, but that's for different reasons than we've discussed.
Indeed. Well, thank you. It's been very fascinating, very interesting discussion. We are definitely in interesting times for sure. I think, we'll see how the summer pans out, particularly going into that election. Yeah, I think that it's going to be a very poignant moment, that. And then maybe, Henrik, we can catch up again. Yeah, maybe as we go into the actual winter, you know, the global winter.
Sorry, Mark. I do think the politicians will do anything and everything to kick this can into early 2025. And Henrik, will be really interested to see how it plays out, actually. I'm genuinely interested.
Well, thank you both. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.